board have projected it already. Sue would like to ask you some questions. Have you heard of the story of Sadhapa, the Bodhisattva Sadhapa Arahita? No? You? So it's a new topic for you, isn't it? Let's start Sutta Dhamma talk. Good evening, Dhamma friends. It's my pleasure to give you another Dhamma talk here. Sutta gave a Dhamma talk. Not this venue, is it? So the talk today is about a Buddhist narrative. So it's a story. Although it's a story, but we can learn something from this story. So it's not a story. It has some deep meaning we can discover. Okay. So the topic today is the story of a Buddhist hero. So we use hero as a topic. So another word for hero is example or good model. So this word is more dramatic. So the story of a Buddhist hero, Bodhisattva, Sadhapa Arahita, and what we can learn from this story. So tonight I would like to show you, share with you the story of Sadhapa Arahita and his search for and attainment of Prajnaparamita. So, anyone knows Prajnaparamita? Ian?
Wisdom of
emptiness. Wisdom of what? Emptiness. Okay. Is your wild guess or you have learned about it?
I heard.
Let's give you a brief definition. Prajnaparamita means perfection of wisdom. Or, because we have different interpretation on this word, some commentators interpret this word as perfection of wisdom, and some explain this word as preaching the show of wisdom. So a bit different. Anyway, just know what this word means. That's okay. So this word means perfection of wisdom or approaching the shore of wisdom. This story is an exemplary account of Buddhists to learn from Sadhapa Arahita's diligent spirit. So in this story, the doctrine of Prajnaparamita, which is vast and deep, is taught through many interesting and impressive episodes. So by paying attention to the details in the story, we can learn how to cultivate the practices that lead to Prajnaparamita. This is Sutta's hope. First of all, Sue would like to show you this picture. This picture is preserved in in the entry of the Kabomen Temple in Himachal Pradesh in India. Any of you from India? No? And I've been to India, no? Don't worry. Just a place. And there's a temple. It's in the northwest, probably in northwest India. And the scene depicts the event where Siddhartha Rudita meets his teacher Dhammogata. As you can see, this and this are Siddhartha Rudita. And this is his teacher Dhammogata. This picture is available on the website of ITBA Gallery. Below I will use the pictures from this website as the visual account of the story. So I hope you, no one of you fall asleep, okay, to make it interesting. Now I would like to show you some background of this story. This story of Siddhartha Rudita is found in the last chapters of Prajnaparamita Sutras. The most well-known version is preserved in chapter 30 and chapter 31 of Ashta Samhatrika Prajnaparamita Sutra. And as you can see on the screen, it's the manuscript written on the palm leaves. Okay. So this is part of the Ashta Samhatrika Prajnaparamita Sutra. It means Ashta Samhatrika means 8,000 lines. So in India, some sutra we name the sutra by accounting his words. So it has 8,000 lines or shlokas. In fact, there are different versions of Prajnaparamita Sutras ranging from 8,000 to 100,000 shlokas. Shloka here refer to a verse of 32 syllables. So shloka means verse made of 32 syllables.
What language is that?
This is Sanskrit, but the script, you know, we have language and a script, different letter. Okay. The script called Ranjana script. Yes. This sutra will give you some information about this. And this sutra is available in different languages, including Sanskrit, Tibetan, Mongolian, Uyghur, and of course Chinese. And these two, there are two versions of the story in various Prajnaparamita Sutras. And some do not have this story. So this is part of the sutra study here. So I will call these two versions, version 1 and version 2. So the manuscript you are looking at is written in Ranjana script around 11th century, very old, older than any of you. And next is the image of the sutra in Chinese. And this one is a part of manuscript of Prajnaparamita Sutra in Chinese, translated by Shen Zhang around 7th century, still older than any of you. And this one is the sutra in Tibetan. Okay. In addition to the two versions, which is preserved in Prajnaparamita Sutra. The story of Siddhartha Rishita also exists in a Jataka form, recorded in the compendium on the six Paramitas. This is the modern edition of this sutra. It's still a sutra, but the genre is different. It's Jataka. A Jataka is the story that talks about Buddha in a previous life. So you know this word Jataka already? Okay, good. The Sanskrit word that it means that which relates to birth. Understand? Jataka is the Sanskrit word, and this word literally means that which relates to birth. So normally we know Jataka means is talk about the Buddha in a previous life, but this is the extension of this definition. Okay. The compendium on the six Paramitas is also available in French, published in 1911. This is the cover sheet of this book, so it's still older than okay. Besides the version preserved in canonical texts, there is a Uyghur version of this story consisting of alternating prose and verse. Here are some samples from the Uyghur version. Is any of you from Europe? No? Are you from European called Uyghur, right? No idea. Yeah. Because I have a German friend. He say Uyghur, and I also have American friend. They pronounce Uyghur. So sometimes it's confused which word, which pronunciation is proper. Okay. Anyway, it's Uyghur or Uyghur. Uyghur people live in Central Asia, right? Yeah, it's an ancient people. Probably we don't know whether we have modern Uyghur or not, but it's Uyghur people live in Central Asia, probably in Xinjiang province in modern day. So this is another image of the Uyghur version. It's not the sutra, it's the verse and the prose. Yeah. So it's sort of creative writing based on the story preserving sutra. And here we can see it's the Uyghur script, Siddhartha. And in Uyghur, the Bodhisattva's name pronounced Siddhartha Urudita. Okay. And you can see something interesting here. We have Chinese characters within the Uyghur manuscript. So this manuscript, all the composer has Chinese background or influenced by Chinese culture. So this word here, actually these two characters are the same, but these two represent Bodhisattva. So if you have chance or opportunity to look at Chinese text, ancient Chinese manuscript of sutra, you can see these characters quite often. So this means Bodhisattva. And this is the script of with gati. So a bit different from the Sanskrit. The Sanskrit is samogata. Now let's start to look at the story and see what we can learn from this story. Sifu will combine all three versions, which are version 1, version 2, and the Jataka version, to give you a richer understanding of the story of Sataparamita. In both versions, version 1 and version 2, it is the Buddha who recounts the story. Buddha here recounts the story of Sataparamita to one of his preeminent disciples, Subuddhi. This is Subuddhi. Okay. He starts the story by advising Subuddhi to search for Prajnaparamita as the Bodhisattva Sataparamita has done. When the Buddha praises Sataparamita as an example for one who seeks Prajnaparamita, Subuddhi asks to learn more about Sataparamita's virtue. According to version 1, here only version 1, Sataparamita was a person who possessed good karma and was destined to fulfill a resolution to care for all sentient beings, but was yet to awaken to his fate. One day, a god tells him in a dream, "You must seek the great Dharma." When he awakens, he starts to seek this great Dharma. It turns out to be a very difficult task, since the three jewels, that is the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, are nowhere to be found. So he is not even able to find any method that is practiced by Bodhisattva. Here, the Jataka version, that is in the compendium on the six paramitas, we are given a more gloomy picture of the world in which Sataparamita dwell. At that time, the world is depicted as the most impure place where humans rejected the good and were strongly attracted to whatever was evil. Like moths being attracted to a flame. A very gloomy world picture. Okay. So because Sataparamita is unable to find the three jewels or any method that is practiced by Bodhisattva, he suffers extreme anguish, weeping and crying day after day. Because his desire to find the great Dharma is frustrated, one day a god comes down and sees him weeping so sadly. Therefore, the god names him Sataparamita, which means ever weeping. He cries all the time. After this event, the god appears again in a second dream. This time, the god tells Sataparamita the name of the previous Buddha. He awakes from the dream the moment this Buddha's name is mentioned. Thereafter, he leaves his home and family and heads to the wilderness to meditate. Like this picture, he leaves his home and family to the wilderness to meditate. It may sound odd that Sataparamita leaves home simply after hearing a Buddha's name, right? you come in a dream, just hear the Buddha's name. So it's odd. But fortunately, the just conversion fills in this gap. What the just conversion say? The just conversion explains that Satyaprabha Rudita had a dream, and in that dream, a Buddha, not the God, but in version one, is God, right? Something a bit different, who had been in Nirvana for a long time, instructed him to abandon all affections, that is, defilement, and detach from the dirt of six faculties, of six organs. And the Buddha says, you should not leave any kind of craving on your mind, even though they are as fine as a hair. And therefore he leaves his home and family with great joy, as if a hungry man had taken delicious food. Retiring to the wilderness to meditate, he subsisted on mountain water and wild fruit. So this makes more sense, right? Because the Buddha asked him to abandon his defilement. Okay, so the approach to abandon the affections or defilement is to go to the wilderness to meditate. So that's why he had to the wilderness to meditate. So having gone off into the wilderness, Satyaprabha Rudita practiced meditation to abandon his defilement as instructed in a dream. However, the meditative life does not fulfill his wishes. Accordingly, he weeps for a second time, so he is easy to get crying. So at that moment, a god appears in the sky and tells him the name of the Dharma, Prajnaparamita. Satyaprabha Rudita then asks, how can I attain Prajnaparamita? Where can I attain it? The god replies, go east, not west. Go east. And admonishes him to pay no attention to his bodily need or personal gain. This is where the version 2 of story begins. So version 1 and version 2 has something different. So version 2 doesn't have this sort of background of the story. So version 2 begins the account, go east. This thing, okay. So, question: would you up and leave for the bush after a dream like that? No, okay. So, Sufu very disappointed. We should learn from Satyaprabha Rudita. Shouldn't we? Okay. So it may sound extreme, and Sufu is sure not many of you are willing to give up everything and go off into the bush to meditate. But it's good to have retreat during the winter vacation holiday or summer holiday. Okay. So it's hard just from a dream. But here we can learn from Satyaprabha Rudita. Persistence and enthusiasm. So after listening to the Dharma, he applied himself to it wholeheartedly, even though the dream, or even though the Dharma was hard to find, he didn't give up. Okay, so for us, the Dharma is easier to access now, so we should appreciate it even more. Make sense? Okay. So when we read the Dharma books, Do you read Dharma books or just listen to Dharma talk? Ian reads some, right? Okay, good. So when Ian reads Dharma books and listen to Dharma talks, we should apply ourselves to its teachings wholeheartedly. Okay? Even if we can't start straight away, we should make promise to ourselves to start it soon. Okay? Time waits for no one, and only by applying the teachings can we really gain the benefit. So remember the saying. So Sadaparita follows the advice and sets off in search of great Dharma, Prajaparamita. Soon after his departure, he is beset with doubts about how far he must go. So he didn't ask. this anxiety brings on the third occasion of weeping. So this is the thing, he is weeping. Suddenly, a Buddha figure manifests in the space. This Buddha comforts him and tells him about the city of Gandavati and the Bodhisattva Dhammakata who lives there teaching Prajaparamita. So after hearing the instruction, Sattaparita enters the series of samadhi. Can you see the picture? He enters a series of samadhi. Do you know samadhis? It means concentration. So he enters series of concentrations, concentrated state. And finally, in the samadhi name, viewing all Tathagatas, he sees all the Buddhas of the 10 directions. This Buddha comforts and prays him and then disappears. Sattaparita then emerges from the samadhi and the doubt arises in him. So what is doubt? Doubt is, where have those Buddha come from? And where have they gone? This is his doubt. While wondering about this, tormented by not knowing the answer, he weeps for a fourth time. As he is weeping, he remembers the instruction to see Dhammakata in the east and start weeping. With that soul, he sets off on his journey. So now let's pause the story here and look at the first four weeping episodes. So if you want to point out something significant to you, they are four weeping incidents and revelations before Sattaparita completely knows the details of Gandavati. If we observe carefully, we can see the Bodhisattva's awareness developing. Okay. So let's look at the first revelation. The first revelation comes from a voice. Do you remember? Yeah, from a voice in a dream, right? And since the Bodhisattva is unconscious, he only hears the words but makes no response. Because he can't find the great Dharma, the voice mentions, he weeps. This is the first weeping. And what about the second revelation or second weeping? The second revelation is also while asleep, right? He while asleep, when the God appears and speaks to him, what does the God speak to him? Go to the bush. Joji W. Bush. I can't remember. First time the Buddha mentioned the name, right? Mentioned the name, and he suddenly awake. And then, so these two dreams profoundly affect Sadaparamita and spur him on to follow practitioners of the wilderness and their cultivation of meditation. So that Sadaparamita hears the names of a Buddha and suddenly he awakens. How about the third revelation? After he spends some time practicing in the wilderness but makes little progress, he weeps again. As a result, a God appears in the sky and tells him, go east, right? And admonishes him to pay no attention to body needs or personal gain. So what does this mean? To abandon our soul of self-centeredness, right? Okay. However, being unsure how to follow these directions, he weeps for a third time, and this leads to the figure of a Buddha who gives him some more teachings. So you want to transcribe. Too difficult. After the third weeping, Sadaparamita is actively involved with the messenger and is able to carry out a dialogue with the Buddha figure. So following the instruction of the Buddha figure, he achieves deep samadhi in which he experiences supernatural powers and sees all the Buddhas in all world systems. In the fourth occasion of weeping, he needs no revelation to quiet his sorrow, for he remembers the words of the Buddha figure and injunction to head east. Thus, we can see Sadaparamita's growing awareness of Dharma and his development through the practice of concentration and hearing of the teachings. Okay, make sense? Okay, let's continue the story. On the way to the city Gandavati, Sadaparamita pauses to rest in a small city. So this is the scene in a small city which called beloved by the evil one. So that means he will encounter difficulty in this city. Here he thinks to himself, I'm so poor that I can't obtain a gift to honor Bodhisattva Dhammogata. Subsequently, he decided to sell his own body in order to purchase suitable gifts. So he decided to sell his body. Difficult? At this moment, Mara, the evil one, however, is not pleased to see such meritorious deeds, as it will make his realm decline. So, by using his great powers, Mara obstructs Sadaparamita and prevents the citizen in the city from upon seeing or hearing Sataprajodita attempts to steal his own body. So no one can hear or see him in that city. So when Sataprajodita realized that he is unable to find any buyer for his body, he goes to one side and weeps for the final time. So this is the thing he weeps. Okay. And at this moment, the god chakra appears and comes to test the bodhisattva's resolution. So the previous one is chakra. And assuming the form of a young man here, he changed his appearance. Okay. He asked to buy Sataprajodita's heart, blood, marrow, in order to offer a sacrifice. So I have to repeat again, heart, blood, and marrow in order to offer a sacrifice. So this is the thing that the prophet cut his body. Sataprajodita willingly agrees to the deal. He takes out a sharp knife and starts to cut up his own body and break his bone and show on the screen. Do you know which one is Sataprajodita? This one, and this is the chakra, the god. That moment, from a nearby mansion, this is a mansion, high building. The daughter of a merchant who was not under the sway of Mara witnesses the incident. The sign of Sataprajodita cutting off his own body distressed and astonished her to such an extent that she rushes out to stop him. Okay. Upon finding out that he is willing to fulfill his supreme resolution in order to make offering to his teacher Dhammagata, the merchant's daughter promises to provide him with the necessary riches from her parents on the condition that he stop modulating his body. So at this point, Shakra, the chief of gods, reveals his true form. So he returns to his true form. At this moment, Sataprajodita is able to make his mangled body whole again on account of the purity and his resolution. Okay. So it's sort of miracle, isn't it? So the difficult stage of the journey has now been overcome, and the Bodhisattva leaves the city, surrounded by great wealth, and accompanied by the merchant's daughter and her 500 serving girls. Finally, he reaches the city Gandavati and acquires from Dhammagata the answer to his question. What is the question? Where have those Buddhas come from? And where have they gone, right? Remember this? So having resolved Dhammagata's doubt, Dhammagata leaves the platform from which he had taught and entered his house. So this is the gate of his heart. here he remains in various states of samadhi for 7 years. Sataparita remains outside the house without sitting or lying down for 7 years as well, waiting for Dhammogata to return to the platform to teach him Prajnaparamita. So it sounds very extreme, right? Eventually, Sataparita is informed that Dhammogata will emerge from Samadhi in 7 days to teach him Prajnaparamita. He appears for his he prepares for his teacher's arrival by cleaning the surrounding. So he wants to do clean up. However, Mala, again, the evil one, intervenes again and prevents him from finding any water to clean the area. But Sataparita sprinkles the ground with his own blood to prevent any dust from being stirred up and soiling Dhammogata's body. So impressed by Sataparita's sincerity, Shaka again helps him overcome Mara's obstruction and offers him fine flowers to revere Dhammogata for his teaching of Prajnaparamita. Okay. So this is the scene. Dhammogata sprinkled his blood to clean the area. Okay. Upon hearing the teaching, Sataparita enters into various samadhis again. At this point in the narrative, the Buddha admonishes Subuddhi to seek Prajnaparamita as did Sataparita. It is here that version 2 of the story comes to a close. In version 1, on the other hand, the story continues. After Sataparita enters into various samadhis, he further inquires about the voice and the body of the Buddha. This is followed by a prediction that Sataparita and his companions will attend Buddhahood in the future. And then the version 1 of the story comes to a close. Okay. Here, Sukhu would like to give you some extra information. According to one of the version 1 translated by Bokashema into Chinese, Sataparita now dwells in a Buddha realm called Nityakanda Prabhuta, which literally means plenty of fragrance. You use fragrance? No, perfume probably. This realm means plenty of fragrance. And in this realm, there is the Buddha called Gandhalaya, whose name literally means accumulation of fragrance. Okay. So that is the story of Sataparita and the trials he goes through in order to find and attain Prajnaparamita. Although some of the events sounds very extreme, like cutting off himself or not sleeping for 7 years. Sometimes you don't sleep for 7 days. Do you? Okay. So Sataparita not sleeping for 7 years. So we can take this sort of expression to show how diligent, devoted, pure, and resolute he was. Is that okay? So much so that Mara feels threatened and Chakra comes to his aid. Okay. So on reflection, does Mara feel threatened by our practice? So we need to think about this. Finally, Sifu would like to talk about why the Bodhisattva is called Sattaprarudita. From the story, we can make out that the god names the Bodhisattva Sattaprarudita because of his weeping, right? So literally, the name Sattaprarudita means ever Sattva and weeping. Prarudita. But if we look at the reason why he cries and weeps, we can see the deeper meaning in his name. In the commentary on this sutra, there are different explanations for his name. One of the explanations says that he had cultivated great compassion, and his mind was always sympathetic, and he always sympathetic. So he had cultivated great compassion, and his mind was always sympathetic. Okay, sorry about that. And he always wept when he saw those who were poor, old, with illness, and grief from the chaos of the world. And therefore, people call him Sattaprarudita. This is from the account preserved in the commentary. So, in other words, the Bodhisattva had cultivated compassion for eons of lives. Due to his compassion for sentient beings, he went to the wilderness in order to aspire after the Dharma diligently to benefit them. So the weeping behind the meaning of weeping is what? Great compassion, right? Okay. So in this story, the name Sattaprarudita represents the characteristic of great compassion. As for Chinese translations, the name Sattaprarudita is translated as Changti, as the first heading, or which means ever weeping, or Changbei means ever grief, which is consistent with the literal sense in Sanskrit, right? And on the other hand, there's the special translation, which is Puzi, the third one, means universal loving kindness by a Chinese translator, Zhiqian. This translation is totally unique and reflects nothing of the Sanskrit. So why the name is so unique? Any idea?
That's the meaning behind the everything.
This translation probably inspired from his characteristic, okay, great compassion, and or loving kindness and compassion. Okay. So therefore, we now know that the name of Sattaprarudita, although based on his constant weeping, actually reflects his great compassion. So when we see someone crying, it may not necessarily mean they are weak. Okay. So it may be that they are very kind. So be not afraid to weep. So in conclusion, now that you have heard the whole story, so would I to ask you a question. What is the crucial element that runs throughout Sataparita's search for the perfection of wisdom? Can anyone answer this question? Yeah. Sorry?
Not self.
Good guess. Any else? Any answer? Okay, that should show you the answer. It's purity and resolution. During the story, Sue mentioned these two characteristics, right? When Sataparita cut off his own body, right? But after Chakra returned his true form, and he also make his mongrel body whole again, right? Because of purity and resolution. Okay. So how can we go about cultivating such purity and resolution? How? Sincerity can help us to cultivate purity. Make sense? No. Let's sort of give you an example. No matter how we do, what we do, we should do it sincerely. For example, when we use in the kitchen, do you live together? Live in a share room or not share house? So when we use the kitchen, if we use it with consideration, that is, we clean up afterwards so that others have a clean kitchen to use as well. So this helps us to develop the sincerity and eventually purity in our actions. So this is an example we can do. And what about the resolution? Okay. Endurance and diligence. Yeah. So endurance and diligence can help us to become more resolute. Often we come across difficulties and obstacles. We may want to retreat, right? Or give up. With endurance and diligence, we can slowly build up our ability to tolerate the intolerable and thus overcome all difficulties. This is the resolution. This is the advice that Sutta will give you. While we have some time left, I would like to show you something amusing. Here is a picture from the temple called Tabomen Temple. Please look carefully. So this is Sataparita, right? Here's a tree that represents wilderness. Okay. Let's see this one. Is the same picture taken at different point in time? Can you see something different? Any difference? Wait, what?
Flowers.
Flowers. The head.
The tree.
The grass. not its head, but its head.
Oh.
Yeah, we don't have head in the previous picture, do we? We don't have head, right? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know why. Naughty little boy or girl and this in the wall painting. But for today's purpose, we can assume it is the God talking to Sattaparita in the wilderness. So it's a coincidence. Yeah. Remember while Sattaparita is in the wilderness, God appeared, right, and asked him to go east. Yeah. And he looked at the sky in the space. And this is the scene, the conversation. Okay, finally, thank you very much for your attention. I hope you all enjoy the story of Sattaparita, and may this Bodhisattva thief provide inspiration for you, your own practice. We've got some time, so Sue is happy to answer any questions if you have, or any comments. Actually, Prajnaparamita means perfect wisdom. It's the final aim, right? So your question probably is how to achieve this final aim. Or can you clarify your question? Any other questions? I sort of collect some questions and then answer. Yes, please. Sufu, get back to her question first. Yeah, it's a good question. How can I say? When we practice the Dharma, it's very important to have a good friend or a good teacher. But you didn't know this point? So when we practice Dharma, it's not practice the Dharma alone. When we encounter some difficulty, we need to get some advice from our teachers or good friends. So they probably have some experience you are having now. Make sense? From Sufu's experience, we need to ask ourselves whether we have the capacity or ability to overcome the difficulty. Different people have different capacity or the ability to tolerate the something difficult, the degree. Some may get sick if we still keep on going. Can you understand? But some can still keep on going and overcome the difficulty. So we need to understand ourselves first thoroughly. Does this make sense? No. So we need to understand. Yeah, it's hard, but it's. If you are very sick, you probably need to take a rest first, and then see what happens after. Can you understand? You can try both ways. You can try and see which one is suitable for you. You can try. It's hard to say because different students have different situations. We can't say you should do this or you should do that. We need to understand ourselves whether we can. It makes sense? Okay. Yeah. Or we can we can go to see our teacher to get some advice. Or to see our consultant to give you some suggestions so that we can have something to think about. Okay. It's not easy, but we need to try.
Okay. I realize that when we are trapped in a situation, we don't know how to solve the problem, we don't know where to go. When talking to other people, it helps. Because they are looking from an outsider perspective and sometimes give some useful advice.
Yeah, to have some experienced teacher or friend, they can give you the proper advice and you can sort out your problem quickly. Otherwise, we just block in the situation and can't find a solution. It make us grieve, okay, or make us suffer. And emptiness, right? You are interested in emptiness? Okay. I think Nenong Sifu talked about this quite a lot. doesn't she? Yeah. But actually, Sifu want to show you something different. Actually, in the Buddhist teaching, particularly in Prajnaparamita scripture, emptiness has two aspects. Interesting. Two aspects. One aspect has a relation, or is a synonym of paticca sampada, means dependent origination. Okay, so emptiness means no fixed identity. This is the word I'm also for you. So nothing cannot be changed. You know what I mean. So everything. Arise depend on the cause and conditions. So this is the sense of emptiness. Okay. So emptiness is a sort of negation, to negate fixed identity. If we have something with fixed identity, we can't change. For example, if we have fixed identity with our body, within our body, we will always look like this. We won't change. Understand? Okay. So this is one aspect about emptiness, which is the synonym of dependent origination. And the other aspect is a sort of situation or experience. You know two truths, you know two truths, conventional and ultimate truths. Yeah. Another sense is to describe ultimate truths. Okay. All the experience the situation or states we experience nirvana. So the other aspect is the synonym of nirvana. So this is to negate sort of duality. You know what I mean? Duality. So when we experience the nirvana, we are beyond the situation or concept of duality. So the basic pair of duality is subject and object, right? So you know the Heart Sutra, do you? You know. So can you chant the English version? No. Okay. So in English version, probably you know, right? No, okay. So it's something like in the emptiness, there's nothing pure, nothing impure. This is a pair, right? Or nothing permanent, nothing impermanent. Okay, something like this. This is sort of duality, but the basic duality is the subject and the object. Why we have attachment? Why? Because we regard the object as real, so we can attach without the base. You know what I mean? When we want to attach something, we need a base to attach on. Right. So the practice of emptiness is to, from understanding the object is dependent, arise, depend on cause and effect. So we don't have the idea of something is real, it changes all the time. Okay. So gradually, we destroy the idea of the object is real, and then reflect outside the subject, destroy us at the same time. Can you understand? So when we realize the object is based on causes and conditions, we will reduce our attachment gradually. Something like you know the bubble. When we are small, we will try to catch the bubble, right? We subconsciously we regard it as real, so we want to catch something or own something. But when you are growing up, we know it will disappear, so we don't do such a silly action, right? So something like this, we practice to contemplate the object as things subject to change or arise based on the causes and conditions. Gradually, we can reduce our attachment. When we thoroughly understand the object is sort of result or effect of causes and conditions, we achieve a certain concentrated state. In this state, we beyond the duality. You know what I mean? So emptiness has two aspects according to the Prajnaparamita Sutra's teaching. One is the synonym or dependent origination. The other one is the synonym of nirvana. It's a sort of a description of the situation we beyond the worldly concept. The basic worldly concept is duality. You and me, subject and object. Okay? Clear? So you know how to practice now? We need to practice meditation. Meditation can calm our mind and purify our souls, okay? And then develop our wisdom. And finally, we can see that the truth. Is that okay? Any questions? Yes, please. Amara.
Yeah.
Amara is the Sanskrit term. It means evil one. Yeah, evil one.
I read somewhere that he's a god, but I read somewhere else that he's like a state of our mind. So can you clarify on this? Amara.
Okay. In Buddhist teachings, we probably have three types or four types of Mara. But this one is a concrete one. It's the divine, sort of divine being. But his job is to distract people. Or lead people. When we start to practice the Dharma, he tried to lure us and encourage us to enjoy the five desires. This is the Mara in the story. Okay. And Mara has a sense of another mala is our five aggregates, because five aggregates make us difficult all the time. Do you know what it means? Make us sometimes we get ill, get sick, or get injured because of five aggregates not function properly. Right? So. Five aggregate is another sort, type of Mara, which means to make our practice difficult. You know what I mean? So Mara has a sense to obstruct our practice. Anything is the obstacle of our practice, they are Mara. So this is the basic idea of Mara. Does the Lord answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes. So who is your Narana? He's your good friend.
Keep asking me to do work.
Okay. Any questions? Yeah, it's interesting that you want to know something about Mara. Questions? Neither. Long time, long see. You have your health question now? So, probably we study or. Finally, probably Sifu will lead you to transfer the merit. Okay. Please join me. don't worry, don't worry. You can follow us.